wronged, there is the practice of being open to or seeking out forgiveness. Forgiving people who have wronged you, the practice of being open to forgiveness for people you have wronged. And the final practice is the practice of forgiving oneself, letting go of grievances against the self. And all of these practices are very important. Each has its own challenges. But tonight I just want to talk about the first of these, forgiving others, because we have time constraints. And I want to talk about it partly from the standpoint of Buddhism and partly from the standpoint of the research. There's actually been a lot of research on forgiveness in modern psychology. The Buddha is quoted as saying, you know, that holding on to anger is a little like grasping hot coals with the intention of throwing them at someone else. You know, the person who gets burned is you. So since he said that, it's a safe bet that he's pro-forgiveness. But it's kind of amazing, interesting, that there are very few references to forgiveness in the suttas. He didn't talk about it all that much. One Mahayana sutta where he did discuss it may provide some explanation for why that is. And the story in that sutta goes like this. The Buddha was sitting under a tree with his devotees, and a man approached who was very hostile toward him. The man, I don't know, probably thought he was an atheist, a challenger of received wisdom, you know, a liberal. And he walked up to the Buddha and spit in his face. And the Buddha looked at him, wiped it away, and said without any animosity or offense, "What next?" So the man was expecting a hostile response, and he didn't know what to do, so he was flummoxed and he ran away. And during the course of the day, he began to feel more and more guilty for having treated a holy man like this. So the next morning, he came back, and this time he prostrated himself before the Buddha and begged his forgiveness. And this is the Buddha's response. "Forgive you for what? The man you spit upon is gone. Men are like rivers changing from moment to moment. The river has flowed much since yesterday, and though I may look the same, I am not. Likewise, neither are you the man who came to spit upon me. That man was angry, upset. This man before me bows at my feet, is open, willing. So there is nothing to forgive. Those two men, the one who spit and the one on whom he spit, are no more." So he had this compassionate, open heart based on the deep understanding of impermanence. And because he did, I guess, his heart was kind of Teflon for grievances. They didn't stick to him. So he didn't need to practice forgiveness because he already experienced the benefits of it. For those of us who are a little less fortunate, you know, whose hearts are maybe a little more like Velcro for grievances, the practice of forgiveness is about getting unstuck, so that's why we do it. That it's useful to do has been really pretty much confirmed, not very surprisingly, by psychology. There are actually more than 1,200 published studies on the whole subject of forgiveness. Some of them were done down at Stanford. There are a few books by psychologists out summarizing this research. And they consistently show that people who are forgiving tend to have not only less stress, but better relationships, fewer general health problems, lower incidences of the most serious illnesses, including depression, heart disease, stroke, and cancer. Why is that? Well, it seems that forgiveness works in part by reducing the caustic effects of being unforgiving. That toxic brew of anger, bitterness, hatred, resentment, and fear of being hurt again. I like that. I mean, I don't like it, but that toxic brew, that toxic mixture of anger, bitterness, hatred, resentment, and fear of being hurt again. That is painful to experience. Anyway, the harmful effects of these negative emotions include increased blood pressure, adrenaline, cortisol levels, which have been linked to cardiovascular disease, immune suppression, and possibly impaired neurological function and memory. And the psychologists who do this research suggest that there may be a subtler, more indirect reason that people who are forgiving do better. Studies show that people with strong social networks tend to be healthier than loners, but people who are angry and remember every slight are likely to lose relationships. And during the course of a lifetime, while those who are forgiving are more likely to attract and keep a strong social support system, which has multiple health benefits, you're more likable if you're forgiving. It's pretty simple. So if this is all true, if picking up hot coals to throw at other people only burns me, if these health benefits of being forgiving are real, then it would follow that not to be forgiving is self-destructive behavior. If you want to move toward more suffering, you don't forgive. If you want to move toward less suffering, you learn to forgive. So that is what I think we could call the right view about forgiveness, that it is a healthy thing to do. It is beneficial to you. Forgiveness may be a gift sometimes that you give to other people, but it is always a gift that you give to yourself, would be the conclusion, I think. And in the course of my work over the last 30 years, my God, 30 years, as a therapist, I've seen a lot of people who've had really horrendous experiences of abuse and betrayal and abandonment, really amazingly terrible stuff. And it is very heartening to see how sometimes when people do the work of their healing and their trauma recovery and tell their stories, how at the end of that process, very often, a very natural, spontaneous, generous forgiveness just arises all by itself. It's inspiring to see, to have this view of what the human heart is capable of doing. But I would have to say that that's not what happens in the majority of cases, in my experience. Recovering from these traumas and abuse does not by itself seem to lead automatically to forgiveness for probably the majority of people, I would say. And in fact, if I bring up forgiveness, often people are quite indignant about the whole idea. Why should I forgive? Why would people behave like that? I suppose there's several reasons. One is that people don't know how to do it. We don't train people in practices of forgiveness and loving kindness. But another is, I think, that this idea of right view, that forgiveness leads to less suffering, is not something that people are universally convinced of. Right? A lot of people don't believe that there's much in forgiveness that, is of any value. I think there are a number of misconceptions about forgiveness that are responsible for that wrong view. I've noted a few over the years, and I made a list of a few of them. The first, what I would call misconception, is the idea that being unforgiving is powerful. Anger is an intense energy, and feeling it can make us feel safe and in control. Many believe that we somehow protect ourselves from harm by holding on to anger. But I think if you pay attention to what actually happens, what we're doing really is just keeping our wounds open. The bottomless self-righteous rage of people who feel mired in victimization feels anything but powerful. And those who are caught in that mind state invariably, in my experience, feel impotent and imprisoned in their own inner hells. So to hold on to this resentment, I often think of it as like trying to run a marathon while carrying a bowling ball. It slows you down. Another misconception, I think, about forgiveness is that the idea is that holding on to resentments punishes other people, punishes the wrongdoer. Many people won't forgive a wrong that was done to them years ago because, you know, it would be letting her or him off the hook. The idea being that this person is, I guess, on a hook somewhere. You know, they may be dead. They may be living on the other side of the country. They may not even know what you're thinking about, but you're not going to let them off the hook. There's some kind of almost primitive idea that by thinking bad thoughts about people, we somehow hurt them or get vengeance. It's a very primitive idea. And fortunately, it isn't true. Our private thoughts are, again, our private negative thoughts are like picking up that hot coal. We get burned. A third misconception, I think, about forgiveness is that it means condoning bad behavior. In fact, forgiveness does not mean forgetting. It doesn't mean denying that real offenses were committed. The idea here is that we forgive actors, not actions. So if you committed rape, you know, and you're forgiven, that doesn't imply that the rape wasn't so bad or that it didn't happen. It just means that you have let go of the resentment toward the actor. The action remains a crime. It remains whatever it was. And another misconception, I think, is that if I forgive you, I have to let you back in my life. If I forgive you, I have to be nice to you and we have to be friends even if I don't feel like it. What this misconception is a confusion between forgiveness and reconciliation. They're actually very different things. It's usually easier to forgive a wrong if the perpetrator apologizes, but letting go of resentment and vengeance is still something that we can do entirely on our own. The perpetrator may never know we're doing it. So it can be a completely solitary act. And again, the person who we're forgiving can be long gone or dead. So it's something we can do internally. Reconciliation isn't like that, because in order for reconciliation to happen, first of all, two people are involved in that. And there has to be some return to friendliness and some return to trust. So forgiveness is about letting go of the past. Reconciliation is about committing to a future. I think of a story of I heard of a woman whose live-in boyfriend was beating her up constantly. And with a lot of help from the support system and the police, she finally got his sorry ass thrown out of the house. And a year later, because she was a dedicated practitioner, she was able to say quite sincerely, "I have forgiven him. My heart is open to him." But the front door is locked, right? So forgiveness doesn't mean naivete. It doesn't mean, you know, I'm spiritual now, I've forgiven, so I'll just, you know. It doesn't mean recklessness. It doesn't mean being naive. And so it's possible to entirely forgive someone and still understand that it would be dangerous to attempt a reconciliation. Along the same lines, forgiveness isn't pardoning either, in a legal sense. If you have a lawsuit against someone who stole money from you, you may be able to forgive them, to understand the causes and conditions which led them to do this unskillful behavior, but still pursue the lawsuit. They're different things. So forgiveness is different from pardoning as well. I think the definition that I like the best is that forgiveness is a conscious, deliberate decision to let go of anger and the desire for vengeance toward those who have harmed you, regardless of whether or not you believe they actually deserve it. So it's an internal action of dropping the hot coal. So the next question is, I think, how do you do it? What is the process by which we can become more forgiving? And I think the first thing I would say about that is that in order to forgive, the time has to be right. When we're talking about real severe abuse, trauma, violence, that kind of thing, it's very unwise to try to forgive before your heart is ready for it. Usually forgiveness comes at the end of a process of recovery, not at the beginning. You have to tell your stories. You have to go through healing. You have to, and you also have to return to safety. If you're not in a safe situation, forgiving the perpetrator is not what you should be doing. You've got to be getting to a safe situation. But once some healing has happened, it does become possible to think about forgiving, I think, psychologically. So the first step is to get right view, to understand that it's in my interest to forgive you. The second step then, I see three steps here. Right view, right intention, and inclining the heart. So you got the right view, forgiveness would be good for me. The right intention is simply to set an intention to forgive. I may not know how to do it now. I may not feel it now. I may feel quite the opposite now. But I decide I am going to forgive you. In doing that, you set the compass of your own heart. And when you set that compass, then you know as you go what helps you in your direction and what hinders you. So it starts with a clear intention. And I think you also, forgiveness is a very mature thing to do. And it requires the maturity to accept some uncomfortable truths, namely that the past can never be changed, that another person's hurtful actions can never be undone, and that the people who wronged us may never see the error of their ways. As Jack Kornfield likes to put it, we have to give up all hope of ever having a better past. Another part of the maturity is it helps to see the big picture. It's easy to form solid identities around our suffering. My victimhood, capital V. All of us, who has never been hurt or betrayed by another person in your life? Yeah, good. I was afraid somebody would raise their hand. It was a spoiled example. This is part of life. It isn't good. We don't like it. But it is part of the experience of being human. It's the inevitable price of being a conscious being. And in this sense, you could say that my pain is not mine. It is the pain of humanity. And when I see it this way, my pain no longer separates me, but connects me through the experience of compassion. So having these kind of reflections can, I think, help. Then the process of forgiving is about inclining the mind in the direction of forgiveness. So that's done through, compassion meditation, metta meditation, and also through the deliberate practice of forgiveness. You can start by sensing the corrosive effect of the anger you're feeling, and again, developing the intention to let it go, and imagine what it would feel like to feel the peace of mind that you'd have if you were free of the burden. And decide that you're no longer willing to be a victim by continuing to allow your thoughts and memories of your offender to torment and deprive you of happiness. The next step, I think, or one next step you can do, is to focus on the specific person who has harmed you. And instead of seeing this person from the outside as the evil other, try to feel into his or her humanity. Try to understand the causes and conditions in their life that have led them to act the way they did. Not to make excuses for their behavior, not to excuse it, but to find compassion for the greed, hatred, and delusion in them that made them act toward you the way they did. You can remember the famous words of Longfellow, who said, "If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we should find in each man's life sorrow and suffering enough to disarm all hostility." So it's very important not to otherize the people who've wronged us. It's a very easy thing to do. I love that word, otherizing. Evicting people from the heart, evicting people from the circle of us, and then they become them. And once the human mind does that, it's very easy to justify all kinds of hatred and cruelty toward other people. So the point is not to do that, to see their human, to see them as human as I am, who suffer just as I do. A next step might be to imagine the offender in front of you, and you could speak to this person as if they're actually in the room. And you know, you can. One of the common phrases that's often used in this practice is something like, "For whatever you have done, intentionally or unintentionally, that caused me pain, I now, to the best of my ability, offer you forgiveness." So you speak to them and in the same time incline the mind toward forgiveness. And when you do this, you may feel an intense relief that falls whenever you let go, even for a moment, of a grudge or resentment. Or you may not. Have you ever been to loving kindness retreats, extended retreats, like for a week? One of the things that happens on these retreats often is that we focus on sending loving kindness thoughts to ourselves and to various other people, and then to all of humanity. And what typically happens for a lot of people on these retreats is that all the ways we're not loving and kind come bubbling to the surface, all the anger and rage that you don't want to experience. And what's interesting is, and so then that's the work, that's the process of purification. But what so many people discover at the end of a retreat is that they feel lighter, that they do feel more compassionate, loving, and more forgiving. So if what happens when you do this practice and resentment rises or intense resistance, it's important not to be disheartened. The thing to do at that point is to withdraw, is to stop imagining the other person and to focus on yourself. If you're feeling resentment and anger, that is suffering. And the response, the forgiving response to your suffering is compassion, to send yourself loving kindness, to be, to hold yourself in an open heart as best as you can. I'd let go of any judgments you have about, oh, I'm a terrible person, or I ought to do this better, or whatever. And then focus on yourself. And then again, later, next day or so on, go back. So to keep inclining the mind toward forgiveness. Over time, I think, what begins to happen is that when you incline the mind toward a mind state, it does begin to develop slowly. It may be very slow. It may be like, you know, one drop of water in the bucket at a time. But over time, it begins to fill up. So that's the thumbnail way. I mean, I've read a number of books on forgiveness written by these psychologists who offer practices, and I can give people references if you're interested. One book has a 20-stage process you're supposed to go through. That's fine, you know. But basically, I think it's three: understand, you know, right view, right intention, inclining the mind. And I think if we do that, we do begin to find over time that gradually we do become more forgiving. At least I hope so. And then it's possible to begin seeing the world as Ram Dass liked to see it. He said at one point, there is no us and them. We're all us. So I will, we have plenty of time. I will stop at this point. And if there are any comments or questions, I would be happy to talk about this with anyone. Yes. If I understand, so intentionally forgiving is less effective than when you make space for yourself. Is that what you're?
Yeah, I'm just making it under questioning. You know, like, take a 20-step process to,
yeah.
You know, forgive someone. Like, you know, like, you know, these people that all grew up together, they never moved away, and they never forgiven before, right?
Right, right. Forgive them, yeah. Right, right. Right. Well, I think it is important, the time, as I said at the beginning, the time has to be right. In order to forgive, I think you have to be, the offenses can't be going on and on and on and on. I mean, often the first step is to get away from the people who are victimizing you or hurting you. And so, yes, you have to have space first. You know, this woman that I talked about had to get her boyfriend out of the house, and then it took a year, and then she was able to forgive him. But the first step is establishing your own safety and your own peace of mind, I think. And that is just, so it's a commitment to self-care. The whole thing is a commitment to self-care, actually, all the way through. Forgiveness is, again, as I said, is a gift we give to ourselves. And also getting space away from people who are toxic in our lives is also an act of self-care that it's quite legitimate to do. It's important to remember that because I think people who are trying to be spiritual think sometimes that's not a very nice thing to do. That's also the confusion between forgiveness and reconciliation. Forgiveness is about being nice to everybody. Does that help at all? Any? Okay. Yes, sir.
Could you comment on forgiving yourself in the context of forgiving others?
Okay. Would I comment on forgiving myself? Well, let's see. I'm not sure I know what to say. Let me think about that. Well, self-forgiveness is often the first practice that people have to do before they forgive others. I talked about a rape at one point and also a boyfriend beating up his girlfriend. So often what happens when abuse happens, especially if it happens to children, is that the victim feels responsible. You know, there's some, and even with adults, there's often this idea, well, I must have done something to deserve this. Or if I did it, if it happened to me, maybe there's some karma that I'm working out or something, some reason it happened to me. When we're treated badly, often we tend to think badly of ourselves because out of an almost primitive childlike faith in the justice of the world. Children especially have this. They think they deserve whatever happens to them. If they're loved, they think they deserve to be loved. If they're neglected, they internalize that and think that that's all they can expect from life and all they deserve. So it's very important in recovering from that kind of thing to notice the judgments you make against yourself. I think it's very important to notice the grievances you have against yourself. And Again, in metta retreats, what they do is you always start with yourself. And this was the instruction that the Buddha gave in metta meditation too, I believe, that you first send loving kindness your way. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be, because until you are right with yourself, you're going to be very limited in what you can give to other people. So really, I think forgiveness of self is probably the first practice. If you try to forgive others and can't, rather than beat yourself up for it or just give up, the important thing is to, put your attention on yourself and focus on yourself. Does that help? Sir.
Mm-hmm. I think part of it for me is also I'm holding on to anger because it's easier than feeling sad about what happened and grieving what happened.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
So I just, it feels important to me in my experience to sort of throw in the idea that part of my movement towards forgiveness has a lot to do with grief about what happened, really feeling what happened, and being sad and letting go of that. That helps create some space for me, so the one was talking about. So grief feels like a piece of that process for me, too.
Yes, did you hear that? One of the reasons that it's sometimes difficult for you to forgive is because it's easier to feel anger than sadness, or it feels like it is. Is that? Yeah, that's a really good insight. I don't know whether this is sexist or not, but I've seen this as more of a male problem than a female problem. The women have it too, but that for a lot of men, being angry just is easier than being sad. I know this is true of women too, but I've noticed it a lot in men. Because there's this, what I called earlier, the delusion that I'm strong and powerful if I'm angry. And also being angry has a protective function because the sadness is often, it's not just sadness, it's also deep hurt. The deep hurt of feeling I was not loved, I was not cared for. And acknowledging that that is what really happened can be very painful. So in some ways it's easier just to stay on the surface and just be angry, vengeful, and so on. You had no right to treat me like this, and so on, rather than to go deep in oneself. And I think this is one of the ways meditation can be so helpful is that, if you sit quietly with yourself for very long, you probably find that whether you like it or not, the sorrow eventually begins to emerge. And it has to be, it will be, people will fight it off. We're afraid of our grief, we're afraid of our hurt. But once you open to it, you've probably found this, what starts to happen is an intense relief begins to happen. The anger is a separating emotion, but experiencing deep grief and hurt can actually open you to feeling, to joining with other people. Is that true? Anything else you want to say about that? Thank you. Thank you. That's a very good point. It just occurred to me, another reason, psychological reason, that sometimes people hang on to their resentments is and this happens a lot in families, is say dad sexually abused you and everyone in the family just says, no, it never happened, or it wasn't so bad, or you should forgive. And so they minimize it, pretend it didn't happen, and there's this conspiracy of silence. It just didn't happen. So what will often happen, one of the reasons some people who were in that situation hold on to their resentments and their grudges is it's a kind of internal protest. Yes, it did happen, and I'm going to hold on to the hurt and remind myself of it every day to stay in my truth that this really did happen. So actually there's a positive intention in that, that the positive intention is to have my own truth, to be true to my own experience. Of course, the question would be, do you have to suffer every day, create suffering for yourself in order to achieve that? The more, probably the better way is to be able to share your hurts, your victimizations and so on with compassionate others who can validate the experience and feed, you know, mirror it back to you in the form of compassion and who will not deny it. That's a better route, I think. Sir? Mm-hmm. Yes. Did you hear that? One of the reasons that he was talking about he might want to hold on to anger and resentment is as a way of turning his attention away from guilt for his own responsibility in what happened. And also you use the word shame. I think because that can also be an irrational feeling. Maybe you didn't do anything to be ashamed of, but maybe you've been taught to live in shame that you're just a bad person. And so one defense against that is to externalize, you know, to be angry at other people. That's very true. That's why forgiveness is really three practices, and I just talked about one part of it today. But it all arises together in actual practice, that part of forgiveness is really being able to tolerate and accept that I hurt people sometimes. I violate my own moral principles sometimes. And that when I do that, I need to make amends and restitution. I need to say I'm sorry. And people are afraid of doing that, in part because if I do that, I'll hate myself forever. There's this fear that, you know, I will succumb to shame. I think what actually happens, my experience of it, is that you feel better when you are able to admit a wrong, and you can say, yes, I've done wrong, but I'm essentially a good person, a loving person. I think that's what people discover really when they are able to ask for forgiveness. It's the people who are the most ashamed and most self-hating who have the hardest time asking for forgiveness, I think. They're terrified that their deepest fears about themselves will be realized. And so that's one of the ways therapy helps people in that position, is to be able to tell your secrets, to tell your the things you've done wrong, and still be responded to with compassion, that you deserve it. You know, you deserve compassion no matter what you've done. Are we out of time? I think we've got time for one more. Sir, ma'am. Ma'am. Okay. I'm sorry? Yes. 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 So you're saying it's okay that you feel hurt. And what else? What other feelings have you made? Having the compassion. Yes. One of the things people have a hard time forgiving about themselves is that they're vulnerable, that they can be hurt, they can be humiliated, they can be shamed, that we're not invulnerable, we're not rocks. It's hard to accept that sometimes. And in terms of forgiving other people, you can't forgive a wrong really and authentically unless you first completely admit that a wrong was done. And that means really experiencing the hurt and the pain and the anger and the fear that it engendered. It's only when you really can experience all of that that any real forgiveness can actually happen. Well, I want to thank you all for listening to me tonight and for the comments. Why don't we just sit in silence for just a few moments? May we all respond to the suffering in our lives with a compassionate and open heart. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.